All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is September 19th, 2025. And the top story this morning, I don't know that this is like earth-shattering news or anything. It could be. There could be potentially some implications for the yen carry trade and thus U.S. asset markets. But, oh my God, I freaking love this story. It's just, it's so wonderfully awful. And it just shows you what a hole this world has dug itself into financially. The Bank of Japan last night, they held interest rates steady. They didn't hike, which was kind of interesting because Japan is supposed to be in a tightening cycle at the end of the most ridiculous experiment in modern monetary theory in world history, really. Also very important is that there was dissension among the central bank governors in Japan. My moderator, Mish, called that one out. That's pretty big because, like, culturally, dissension is not really valued in Japan. Right here in the United States, when, you know, we have the whole like devil's advocate principle, dissension, contrarian beliefs, it's almost like idolized here in the West. It's the opposite in Japan. So to see central bankers deviating from the consensus, that's significant in a culture that values conformity and compliance. Now, beyond all that, what's really amazing to me this morning is the story that the Bank of Japan is going to start selling its position in ETFs. Now, I didn't even really realize that this was out there. Apparently, Japan has been buying stocks all along, not just, you know, like the Japanese central bank basically is the bond market in Japan. More than 50% of Japanese government bonds are owned by the Bank of Japan, by their own central bank. It's like the Fed run amok. But they also own stocks. They've been buying ETFs. How much did they buy? 79.5 trillion yen. If you don't abla yen, that's a little more than $500 billion, about $537 billion worth of ETFs that the Japanese central bank has bought. It's 7% of their entire stock market is owned by their central bank. Oh my God, this experiment in modern monetary theory. Well, yesterday, they announced that they're going to start unwinding that position. Oh, well, that's good. That's encouraging, right? They're admitting they made a mistake and that, hey, maybe printing money and buying stocks with printed money, probably not in the best interest of the average person, probably not going to help things. But at the pace they are proposing for this sale, it's going to take them 100 years, more than 100 years, to unwind the position. Which means we will never see that reach zero. We alive today walking this earth, all right? For the rest of our lives, the Japanese central bank will be selling stocks and we'll all be dead and buried before they get to nothing. And let's be honest with you, they're not going to sell for 100 years, right? They're going to go for 1 year. Some bank is going to blow up and they're going to stop and they're going to reverse course and start buying again, just like our central bank does every freaking time with bonds. But hey, at least they're starting. And you know what? At 100-year pace, they'll get to zero before the Federal Reserve balance sheet gets to zero. But it just goes to show you how ridiculous central banks have gotten. Now, Japan is a very extreme example. What the Bank of Japan has done over the last 15 years or so with their bond market and now with their stock market too, it's an extreme example. But you know, look where we're at. Look at the Federal Reserve balance sheet. You know, the Fed still owns, what, $7 trillion of U.S. government bonds? That means when the government needs to borrow money, they call the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve prints it and lends it to them. And we wonder why we have inflation. We wonder why it's been, what, 5 years since we hit our arbitrary 2% inflation target? And all the central banks of the world are in the process of making it worse. They're easing in Europe. They're easing in the U.S. They're not hiking in Japan. Certainly China unleashing the fire hose of liquidity, trying to stimulate consumption in that country. The whole world is printing money and claiming it's good economics. And, you know, look, some like half-drunk first-year economics student who stumbled into class hungover, reeking like the booze he drank last night, understands printing money is not economic prosperity. And yet everybody is doing it. All of these magnificent economic minds and people that are in power around the world, they're just like, print money. It'll solve the problem. And we wonder why inflation won't come down to 2%. Well, where's all this going? Obviously, guys, you just got to own gold. I've said it over and over again on this channel. There is not enough gold in the world for what's coming because of this stupidity. Japan's just the latest and greatest example of that. And along the lines of gold this morning, we've got Ray Dalio is out in an interview saying that gold will be a better store of value than fiat for the foreseeable future. He's advocating for a 10% allocation to gold. Jeff Gundlach, the bond king, he's out there saying a 25% allocation to gold would not be excessive. Think about that. That's a guy who's like known as, you know, like the greatest mind in the bond market in years, right? Everybody listens to Jeff Gundlach when he talks about bonds, and he's saying put a quarter of your money into gold? Yikes. What does that tell you? It tells you that real yields are going to be negative for the foreseeable future, negative real yields. That means the interest rate that government bonds pay you is going to be less than the rate of inflation, which means you're losing money investing in government bonds. And if you're not going to invest in government bonds, what's the best safe haven asset? It is gold, hands down. And that's why we're watching gold continues to rip here, you know, hovering around $3,600, $3,700. And look, we're even starting to see some pretty nutty stories. Like there was two high-profile thefts in the last couple of days. There was several hundred million dollars worth of gold, or I don't even remember the number, but it was a lot of gold. Priceless relics were stolen from a museum in Paris. The same thing happened in Egypt. You know, 1,000-year-old gold artifacts are being stolen and melted down for scrap value because the price of gold is running so much. So I don't know what to tell you guys. Put your cars in the garage, hide your catalytic converters, because that's probably a sign of things to come. And another sign of things to come, Brera Holdings, ticker BREA. All right. You guys have all heard of Brera Holdings, right? Oh, you haven't? Oh, that's right. You haven't. Nobody's hold of Brera Holdings because it's a stupid shitco company and nobody cares. Well, nobody cared until yesterday when they announced that they're no longer going to be buying and selling football clubs. That was their core business. No, now they're going to change their name to Solmate, spelled S-O-L, mate. And they're going to become a Solana treasury company. And the stock rallied 225%. So, you know, we're still at the phase where any shitco can announce we're no longer a shitco. Now we're a shitcoin treasury company. And their stock rallies more than 100% instantly just on that announcement. Just goes to show you guys, crypto winter is just around the corner. When the fraud and when the froth and the stupid FOMO reaches a fever pitch like this, you know something bad is going to happen. I can't tell you what it's going to be, but I can tell you it's going to be soon because it's getting ridiculous in crypto. Brera Holdings, the latest example of that. We had another big error in jobless claims. We reported jobless claims yesterday and we said, okay, you know, the initial claims came down. That was expected. Continuing claims dropped quite a bit though. Well, it turns out that was an error. The jobless claims by North Carolina were underreported by about 19,000 due to a glitch. A lot of them glitches lately. And so they artificially lowered the continuing unemployment claims. Keep in mind, this is just a week after Texas overreported their initial unemployment claims by 15,000 because of unemployment fraud. And it's just another example, guys, of our economic instrumentation is not working. We are flying blind, making vital decisions based on flawed data. The jobs numbers don't work. The inflation numbers don't work. But it's the best economy ever just because some guy somewhere said something. We got Lennar earnings disappointed, more problems, more squeezing of margins among home builders. FedEx earnings beat. That was actually a big surprise. FedEx reported pretty good numbers. We've got tariffs and inflation showing up in the Philly Fed Manufacturing Index. That's important to look at. And Sweden is loaning money, $23.5 billion, for new nuclear reactors as the world takes another look at nuclear because of the build-out in data centers. And of course, we have a warning about private credit and private assets in your 401k, as we do most days. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button for the YouTube algorithm. You new guys, hit that subscribe button. Come on back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets. We do this every day. S&P 500 right now, it's up by another 17 points, about a quarter of 1% higher ahead of the opening bell. The Dow is also looking good here, up 121 points or about a quarter of a percent higher as well. And the NASDAQ also up just less than a quarter of a percent, 58 points higher ahead of the open. So we got stocks are up across the board once again. Looking over at the DXY, we've got a slightly stronger dollar here, 97.65. That's up by 29 basis points. That's 2 days in a row. The dollar has strengthened somewhat since the Fed cut rates. And looking over at the bond market, notice again, guys, look at the long end of the yield curve. It's not a big move, but it is moving up. The Fed cut rates, 3 days ago, 2 days ago, and rates have done nothing but go up ever since. Pay attention, all you people out there who are like, let's get an adjustable rate mortgage because I think interest rates are going to go down. Not yet. They're not doing it. 30-year Treasury, 4.748. That's higher by almost 3 basis points this morning. The 10 years at 4.133. That's higher by 3 points as well. The 2 years at 3.578, higher by 1 point. And the 1 month, 4.104, higher by 2 points and change. So interest rates are going up despite interest rates going down. Somebody make that make sense. Oh, that's right. The Fed doesn't control the long end of the yield curve. And that also might be why metals are having a pretty good morning as well. We've got spot gold is up just under $9, about a quarter of a percent, $3,653 for gold. Spot silver is also recovering after 2 days of selling pressure, $42.20 for spot silver. That's higher by 37 cents or 0.88% higher this morning. I like this shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is up 0.32%. Platinum is up by about 0.1%. Palladium is down by 1.5%, and crude oil is also down 0.9% here, $63 even for October WTI futures. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are red this morning in Bitcoin, $116,155. Look, guys, be careful in Bitcoin. Maybe there's a chance we make another high here. We're very close to the end of this cycle. At this point, I would say there's a 50-50 chance that we have already seen the high for this cycle. Maybe we make one more run into the 120s here. But again, we'll get to this Brea Holdings story in a little bit. I just see the things getting worse and worse in crypto. It's usually a sign that something's about to pop. But here's the big one this morning. What the BOJ unwinding its ETF holdings means for Japan. It means things in Japan were worse than even I thought they were. This story is just nutty. The Bank of Japan plans to start unwinding its exchange-traded fund holdings in a process that could take more than a century to complete. As of mid-September, the BOJ held about 79.5 trillion yen, that's $537 billion, worth of ETFs by market value, and they had about 43.8 trillion yen of unrealized gains. Wow, they did really well on that trade. Well, as it turns out, when you print money to buy stocks, stocks go up. But the problem is the money goes down by even more. And that's why investing in stocks in Venezuela was a terrible idea 20 years ago. Even though it's up a trillion D percent, it doesn't matter because the currency is worthless. Reducing its stockpile of ETFs, funds that aim to match the performance of a basket of assets or a specific index, would help the BOJ to start to look more like a normal central bank. It's entering a new era after decades of unconventional monetary policy to combat deflation, which included buying ETFs to stimulate the economy. However, the sell-off risks undermining confidence in Japan's stock market, which has been hitting record highs this year. The BOJ holds the equivalent of about 7% of the Japanese stock market via ETFs, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. That is just a wild, wild statistic that the central bank owns almost 10% of the stocks on top of the half of the government bonds. Good God. The BOJ announced in September that it will start selling its ETF holdings at a pace of around 620 billion yen per year by market value, or about 330 billion yen by book value. This marks the first time in the central bank has laid out a plan for offloading the assets that it accumulated over years of ultra-easy monetary policy. BOJ Governor Kazuo Ueda said the decision to sell the ETFs isn't related to the level of the stock market and that offloading all of the bank's holdings may take more than 100 years to finish under the current plan. He also said that it's appropriate to offload the ETFs slowly and that he hoped future BOJ boards would continue with the process. Narrator says, turns out they wouldn't continue with the process because about, you know, they got 1 year into it or 2 years into it, and then the yen carry trade blew up again, and they had to switch over to buying again. Probably what's going to happen. You know, they're definitely not going to go sell for 100 years. It's just not going to happen. And also, the Nikkei erased their gains to trade lower after the BOJ kept interest rates steady. That's also important, even though, okay, we're going to spend the next 100 years correcting our modern monetary mistake. Still, we're not going to raise interest rates. And so the market did not like that one. Japan's benchmark index paired gains to fall 0.57% Friday after the Bank of Japan kept its policy rate steady at 0.5%, in line with the forecast from a Reuters poll of economists. Yeah, guys, look, 0.5%. That's the interest rate that the BOJ is holding at. Nothing 0.5. All right. And that is a much higher rate than we were at 2 years ago when we were at nothing point nothing. And actually, most JGB yields were negative. They're holding here. They're abandoning their hike at 0.5%. That is really wild. The benchmark index had hit a fresh record for a second consecutive session earlier in the day, but the index closed at 45,045, while the Japanese yen appreciated 0.14% against the dollar to 147.8. The decision to hold rates comes as Japan's core inflation rate in August fell to its lowest since November of 2024 at 2.7%, marking a third straight month of decline. The Bank of Japan's decision to hold rates steady underscores its cautious stance amid slowing inflation and global uncertainty, prioritizing stability over premature tightening, said Hiroaki, some guy I can't pronounce. He said that by preserving policy optionality, the BOJ is signaling its readiness to respond to external volatility while continuing to assess the strength of Japan's economic recovery. By the way, that external volatility, that's red tariffs. That's what he's talking about there, the trade war. The BOJ strategy supports the early stages of a reflationary cycle rather than reversing course. Japan's a mess, guys. And look, they're trying to get out of this modern monetary experiment that they've been in for the last 20 years or so, and it ain't working. And, you know, we're not far behind them. The United States, me and Mish were talking about this morning. The United States is maybe 20 years behind Japan, tops, if not less than that. So we'll be doing the same thing eventually if we don't change. And Ray Dalio sees that. Ray Dalio says gold, non-fiat currencies, will be stronger stores of value as U.S. debt mounts. All right, these are some of the biggest fund managers in the world, and they're saying the U.S. spending problem is so bad now, you better own gold, all right? These are not your YouTube doomers. You're talking about Ray Dalio here. Pay attention, guys. Bridgewater founder Ray Dalio said Friday that gold and non-fiat currencies will become stronger stores of value as major currencies face devaluation risks amid mounting debt pressures globally. Speaking at the Future China Global Forum 2025, Dalio warned that the excessive spending and spiraling debt by the U.S. government has become unsustainable, you think? And that the world's largest economy is facing a major fiscal crisis that will put its monetary order at risk. I agree. He added that all currencies risk losing their appeal as repositories of wealth when global governments appear reluctant to rein in excessive spending and borrowing, making gold and not fiat currencies more viable stores of value. And yes, fiat currencies, with what the United States government is doing, the U.S. dollar is no longer a repository of wealth. It is more a suppository of government debt than anything else. Dalio urged investors to diversify their assets with around 10% of their portfolio in gold. That's pretty interesting. Dalio is saying 10% gold, which is historically pretty high for what usually guys like Dalio will say, put 5% in gold as an insurance policy stop, you know, tops. Now he's saying 10%. And it was just yesterday, Jeff Gundlach, the bond king, said put 25% in gold. What they're saying is real yields are going to be negative for the foreseeable future, that if you put money in government bonds, you're losing money over time. That's the only way the government can deal with its runaway debt problem without cutting spending, is by inflating away the money, which means the interest that it charges is going to have to be less than the rate of inflation, which means that the Fed is going to have to keep printing and buying government debt. And by the way, look at this. Shout out to Mr. Uppy on X, who posted this one. This is a Bank of America chart. He's showing fund managers' allocation to gold. It's rising but it remains at just 2.4%. Think about that. It's one of the best performing assets of the year. Gold has outperformed the S&P. Gold has outperformed pretty much everything this year. And yet fund managers around the country only have 2.4% exposure to gold on average. 39% of them have no exposure to gold whatsoever. That is pretty wild, which means there's potentially a lot of money that could be making its way into gold over the next few months. By the way, I have to call out the chart crime here, Bank of America. Since when do we go on? Look at the vertical here. 0%, 4%, then 2%, then 6%. Why would you ever do that? I don't know. Personal foul, chart crime, Bank of America, 15-yard penalty. Repeat fourth down. And also in a sign of things to come, this is pretty wild. Egypt says a stolen pharaoh's bracelet was melted down and sold for $4,000. A freaking 3,000-year-old priceless piece of history was stolen from a museum and melted down for scrap. That's a what stage kind of moment. And you know, Mish has been spotting stories like this recently. There's a lot of stuff that we talk about that never quite makes it to the show. This is one we talked about just a few days ago, never made it to the show. Gold worth $700,000 stolen in Paris museum heist. The theft of the National Museum of Natural History this week is the latest in a wave of heists hitting cultural institutions across France. So priceless pieces of history made out of gold are being disappeared from museums. By the way, interesting thing, apparently the security systems at this museum were down because of a hack. And they think that the thieves knew about this kind of a sophisticated operation to steal $700,000 worth of gold. But yeah, priceless heirlooms disappearing from museums to be sold to the recycling center. Who had that on their 2020s bingo? And in the most ridiculous story of the day, I don't know, maybe is this more ridiculous than the Japan story? Let me know in the comments. What do you guys think is more ridiculous? Solana gets a soulmate via $300 million treasury firm as stock surges 500%. The race to build the biggest Solana treasury is on. I wasn't aware there was a race. Like, there's more than one person out there that wants to build a Solana treasury company? Okay, I find that shocking, but I digress. NASDAQ-listed sports holding company Brera Holdings, who said Thursday that it will pivot to a Solana-based digital asset treasury, changing its name to Soulmate, and now its stock is skyrocketing. Brera, which buys football and volleyball clubs, said it has raised $300 million via a private investment in public equity round with ARK Invest and the Solana Foundation and Rockaway X all backing the company. United Arab Emirates-based Pulsar Group led the funding round. And this is what's so great about this. ARK Invest was one of the investors. All right, Kathy Wood is buying a chunk of a Solana treasury company. All right. If only there were signs that we were near the top. ARK Invest, treasury company. The firm's stock, which trades under the ticker BREA, rocketed on the news and was recently up 500% on the day. It would settle at a much more modest 255% higher. With shares priced at close to $46, shares have since settled to a price of about $40. Brera said it expects dual listings on the NASDAQ and the Abu Dhabi Securities Exchange once it converts to Soulmate. Look at this thing. Up 225% yesterday. It's up another 37% pre-market. So, like, what's that? Like another 150% to yesterday's gain you could add if we're going based on yesterday's base factor. Unreal. Like, all they did was say, we borrowed $300 million and we're going to buy Solana. Within 2 weeks of the top in the crypto market, and Kathy Wood's like, oh, great, here, take my investors' money. I haven't lit that on fire in about a month. If only there were signs we were near the top. And we got another error in the labor data. North Carolina jobless claims understated due to technical error. We were noting that decline in continuing unemployment claims yesterday, and, well, it turns out that was a mistake. North Carolina jobless claims data were mistakenly understated in a weekly U.S. Labor Department report on Thursday as a technical error slashed the state's tally by more than 19,000. The report showed just 205 continuing claims for the week ended September 6th. That's the lowest on record for the state. Typical readings hover closer to 20,000. The North Carolina Department of Commerce, which gathers and transmits the data to Washington, said the figure was the result of a technical error and that the correct number is 19,355. A Labor Department spokesperson said they were still looking into it. And this chart here prepared by Bloomberg, you can see the black line is what they actually reported. And then the yellow line is what the actual data was. So, you know, that's the second week in a row. We had a problem with initial claims last week in Texas because of fraud. Now we've got a problem with continuing claims because of North Carolina. This is right after the big downward revisions to the annual benchmark that wiped out almost a million jobs over the last year, and after the monthly downward revisions to the non-farm payrolls reports. And then they fired the statistics guy at the Department of Labor, or no, it was the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And now we're getting these state level mistakes. Are, you know, this is important, guys. These are important data points. And a lot of people make a lot of very important decisions based on these numbers. And we're just seeing time and time again how flawed these numbers are. Be careful. Meanwhile, Lennar missed revenue estimates and the stock is down. Problems are building among the home builders. And we shouldn't have that because supposedly we have a housing shortage. Lennar stock was falling after the company reported third quarter earnings that missed analysts' expectations. The builder's margin narrowed more than expected in a tough housing market. Lennar earned $2.29 a share, or $2 excluding mark-to-market gains on tech investments, or $8.8 billion in revenue. Analysts had expected earnings of $2.10 a share on revenue of just under $9 billion. So it's a miss on the top and the bottom line there for Lennar. However, Lennar's gross margin, a closely watched metric at a time when home builders are cutting prices and offering buyer incentives to sell homes, was 17.5%, shy of consensus estimates calling for 17.8%. The margins at the buyers are being squeezed because they're doing all these silly perks and things and rate buy downs, all these things to avoid lowering the prices of their homes because they don't want to mess with the comps. They don't want, you know, that Zestimate. When you go on Zillow, they don't want that to look lower. And so they're doing all these other things. It does show up in their profit margins, even if it doesn't show up in the comps when you go on realtor.com. The stock was down 2.9% shortly after the release. Investors had been looking to Lennar's earnings for signs that the worst was over for builders and their profit margins. Builders have been pumping the brakes on construction and offering plenty of incentives to sell homes in a slow housing market, census and industry data show. Lennar stock is now, the opening bell has rung, and it's down even more, off by 5.5% and falling, $126.11 for Lennar. Meanwhile, FedEx shares rally as Wall Street cheers profit beat amid trade uncertainty. I can tell you guys, FedEx popped late last night on this news, and then it was back down to pretty much even right before we went live. I'm not really sure what happened between here and there, but FedEx reported pretty good numbers. Shares of FedEx climbed 5.4% in pre-market trading on Friday after the parcel giant's first quarter results surprised Wall Street, driven by strong domestic deliveries and cost-cutting measures that offset a tariff-induced decline in international volumes. Analysts who had tempered their expectations amid global trade headwinds anticipated a profit hit from the end of the de minimis exemptions that allowed duty-free entry for shipments under $800. Instead, FedEx reported a 2.2% rise in adjusted profit for the quarter through August. FedEx's solid fiscal 1Q and issuance on fiscal year 26 guide was a positive surprise for a company that has been battered by a wide array of headwinds. Although we note the bar was relatively low heading into the print, JP Morgan analysts wrote in a note. Now, FedEx stock, again, it was up 5% on the initial report yesterday, and then it sold off a little bit this morning. I don't know what's really driving it. You saw it was red just a second ago. Now it's up like a third of a percent. Nice pop after earnings, and then it all just bled out. I'm not really sure what has caused this reversal. I went looking for it before I went live. I couldn't find anything. If you guys know why the reversal in FedEx shares this morning, let me know in the comments. I really don't know what caused that. Also, something important to note, we got the Philly Fed Manufacturing Index. Now, this is keyed to zero, so anything above zero shows expansion in manufacturing activity for the Philadelphia region. It came in at 23.2, up from negative 0.3 last month, so that's good, right? We've got indications of manufacturing activity picking up in the Philadelphia region, but the reason why I picked this data point today is because of what's happening with prices. You know, they keep a lot of data points go into this index. Among those is prices paid and prices received. Both price indexes moderated but remained elevated, with the prices paid index falling 20 points to 46.8. Okay, remember, we're keyed to zero here. So 46.8, that is a big increase in the prices paid. Now, it fell 20 points because it was over 66 last week or last month. Last month, prices in the Philly Fed Index were going vertical. That's your tariffs showing up in your manufacturing, all right? Prices paid, that's what you pay for your commodities, for your inputs, for your labor, all right? So maybe a little bit of the immigration crackdown is showing up there as well. But I think tariffs is probably the biggest driver of that prices paid index being at 46.8, which is showing increasing prices. Now, the prices received index, what they charge the consumers, that was also down 17 points to 18.8. A little bit deceptive in the wording there. It was down 17 points, but it's still 18.8, which means prices are still rising. They're just rising slower than they did a month ago. Now, the important thing here, forget the rising and falling. You got 46.8 on prices paid and 18.8 on prices received. That means the cost of doing business is going up faster than what they can charge consumers. There's a lot going on here. You can see the tariffs. You can see the rising labor costs because of the crackdown on immigration. You can see that driving up the cost for businesses, and they're trying to pass that on to the consumers, but they can't because the consumer can't afford it. So consumer prices are rising slower than producer prices. So you're seeing profit margins getting compressed. Pay attention, with stocks at all-time highs, profit margins getting squeezed. You know, outside of this silly build-out in data centers, nothing is doing well. And that's what you can see in this Philly Fed Manufacturing Index. Meanwhile, Sweden is setting aside $23.8 billion for new nuclear reactors. We're getting a little bit low on time here, guys. Let me just say, I like to see this. I'm glad Europe is moving back towards nuclear power. I think Europe drank way too much of the Greta Kool-Aid, and they went all in on renewables, and their grid is paying the price for it. I mean, the whole power grid in the Iberian Peninsula failed earlier this summer because of it. Germany is deindustrializing because of it. So when I see Sweden getting ready to build more nukes, this is good. And they're focusing on small modular reactors. I agree with that sentiment. I think small modular reactors are the future. The one thing I would warn you guys about, there's a famous saying in nuclear power, that the culture in nuclear power is very, very careful. They're very conservative. You probably can see that reflected in my own dialogue and my own positioning and beliefs towards financial markets. You can see how careful I am. That's the nuclear training built into me. I can tell you, nukes have a famous saying, under promise and over deliver. And I think that's probably a derivative of something like Reagan said back in the 80s. But that's a saying that you hear in the boardroom all the time in nuclear power, under promise and over deliver. And I can tell you, there are a lot of people in nuclear right now who are making some pretty wild promises. There are a lot of nuclear startups that are making claims that just do not pass the sniff test. And you can tell these people are not real nukes, because anybody who actually works in nuclear power would never make promises like that because they know they're going to fail. And so just be careful in the nuclear space. Be very careful in the fusion space. Some of the claims I see being made about fusion are just patently absurd going on right now. Fusion remains decades away at best. Some people are out there already cutting power purchase agreements for fusion reactors where they haven't even built a prototype yet, and yet they think they're going to be selling power from these things within a year. Just never going to happen. But I am encouraged to see the investments in nuclear power. I do think SMRs are the future. Just be careful of people making wild promises. And last but not least, I want to send a shout out to Junk Bond Investor on Twitter or X. He posted this one. This is actually from a little while ago. But again, I want to devote at least a little bit of time to private credit and private assets every show, because I do think this is going to be a very big story in a couple of years, maybe even a couple of months. And Junk Bond Investor is saying, private credit secret sauce per Standard & Poor's, low default rate hinges on a narrow definition of default. And it just goes to show you guys that the reason why these investments look so good and why the volatility is so low is because they just lie about them. A major selling point of private credit is the low default rates. However, this reputation hinges on a narrow definition of default typically covering only traditional defaults, such as missed payments in Chapter 11 filings. It often overlooks instances like conversion of cash pay interest to PIK, which is payment in kind, where instead of paying the interest on their debt, they just give you a chunk of equity in the company. And they're like, a payment in kind sounds great. No, it's really a default. Amortization holidays, where they basically give them a break. Maturity extensions without adequate offsetting of compensation. In other words, extend and pretend. It runs rampant in the private credit space. And that's why they say defaults are so low. In other words, the prices, the marks are not accurate in private credit. It's just another warning, guys. Be careful. Know what is in your 401k. Know what is in your IRA, because they are trying to park this garbage in your retirement account. Don't let them do it. Be a smart consumer, smart financial consumer. And I just want to say thank you very much. A lot of you guys this morning. Nacho Man says, Jay, only get the $2 window. Is that a pop culture reference or something? I don't get out much. I'm not sure about the $2 window here. I can tell you I got a bunch of $2 bills because coin shops are always giving them out as change. It's like the only place in the world where you can frequently see $2 bills in circulation is at local coin shops. Probably because people always bring them in thinking they're worth something and the guy feels bad. And so he just gives them $2 bills, takes the $2 bill, and then gives that out as change when his customers come in. Anyways, sorry, Nacho Man. I don't pick up on the reference to the $2 window, but I am ever so grateful for your support of the channel. Thank you, sir. And there's my buddy Travis, Real Estate Mindset. What's going on, brother? He says $2 on a navy blue shirt today. Wah, 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 wah. Sorry, brother. We went maroon, which means your $2 bet is going to be permanently marooned in my own wallet. But hey, thank you so much for supporting the channel. Guys, check out Real Estate Mindset. Travis is doing some fantastic work over there, challenging the runaway property taxes in Texas in the court system. And I think you are doing a public service over there. I think what they're doing to people in Texas and other states with property taxes is just theft. It's confiscation. It's a tax on unrealized capital gains. It's unconstitutional. And I wish you luck, brother. Thank you for supporting the channel. Nacho Man is back again. He says, happy Friday. Happy Friday to you as well, the Nacho Man, Randy Savage. I appreciate the support of the channel and the good vibes. And while we're on the Friday topic, shout out to my magnanimous melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. We have our weekly get-together on Zoom at 2 p.m. Eastern time today. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Thanks again, Nacho Man. Hey, there is my buddy, the Pasta Man. He says, I confirm when I print money, it's good economics for me. That's good. I like the way you think, Pasta Man. Yes, printing money always sounds great to the guy who is receiving the money that is printed. By the way, this is not Gresham's Law. What is it? This is the Cantillon effect, right? I mean, your joke, you just turned the Cantillon effect into the punchline of a joke. The people closest to the money printer see the benefits. The people furthest from the money printer pay the price. That's what Pasta Man's saying. Oh, yeah, when I print money, it's great for me. Gee, do you think maybe that's why people on CNBC and Bloomberg and the financial press, while they're always in favor of quantitative easing, while they're always in favor of lowering interest rates because they're closer to the money printer than everybody else, and so it's really good for them and the people who buy advertising on their channel, and it sucks for everybody else, and then they have the gall to go on the air and say it's the best economy ever. The poor people are just too stupid to know it. Interesting. One of those things. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Oh, I just got a text from Mish. Okay, thank you very much, Mish. Appreciate that. Thanks again, Pasta Man. Uncle Fedster says, happy Friday, Jack. Do you think gold allocation recommendations will significantly increase the gold to silver ratio? Interesting thought there, because the gold to silver ratio has been in decline for a couple of months. Gold wildly outperformed silver earlier this year. And that's one of the reasons when the gold to silver ratio went over 100, I just knew silver was due to rip or gold was going to fall. Silver ended up ripping. Now it's back down to a more respectable but still unusually high 86, 87 level. So all these things about gold allocation, it could increase the gold to silver ratio, Fedster. Like let's say all the fund managers listen to Ray Dalio and they listen to Gundlach. And they all decide we're going to go 5% gold up from 2.5%. That's going to be a lot of demand for gold. It's going to bring the gold price higher, and it's going to raise the gold to silver ratio. But I do think that will put some upward pressure on silver prices as well. So silver will probably rise along with it. I also think, guys, there is a paper shortage of silver going on right now. Check out that video I did with Bob Coleman on my channel yesterday. Bob has spent a lot of time tracking things like the cost to borrow shares of the SLV ETF. By the way, for 2 days in a row, there were no shares of the SLV ETF available to borrow. Why is everybody so eager to borrow shares of SLV? Maybe the short interest is too high and we're coming up on options expiration today. So conditions are actually ripe for a little bit of a squeeze in SLV here. Also, at the same time, silver lease rates in London, which are historically like nothing 0.1%, they're up over 5.0% right now. So the cost to borrow silver is really high. There's a lot of leverage built up in paper silver that looks a lot like a shortage. And there could be a setup for a silver squeeze happening here. Even though you go to a coin dealer and a coin shop, the premiums are super low. There's plenty of inventory. But the physical and the paper silver markets, we learned in 2021, they are wildly different things. So I am watching the silver ratio. If we do see fund managers reallocate to gold, yes, it will push the gold to silver ratio higher. But I still think over time, the GSR is heading back towards something closer to like 65 long term. Thank you, Uncle Fedster, for supporting the channel. Steve Wojtas says, RE bond market, when issuers offer higher coupons, it's because bond demand is low versus supply and they need to attract buyers. Yeah, right? I mean, bonds, you're buying money, right? That when you issue a bond, you're buying money. The price of the money you're buying is the interest rate, right? So if the supply of money isn't enough for what you're trying to borrow, if the demand for money is more than the supply, then the price of the money is going to go higher. The interest rate is going to go higher. And if you're like, oh, I don't know, a shitcoin treasury company, and you're like, I want to borrow $300 million, even though I'm not profitable, you're probably going to pay a pretty high interest rate on that money you're going to borrow, because there's not a lot of money out there eager to lend itself to people who are going to take it and go buy freaking Solana or WorldCoin with it. So yeah, I mean, absolutely. When the supply, what are we talking about here? When bond demand is low versus supply, they need to attract buyers. Yeah, you get lower prices and you get higher yields. That's pretty much what happens. And that's why it's pretty important to understand the relationship between bond prices and yields. Once you really get that down mentally, a lot of things start to fall into place. So pay attention to that, guys. I know stocks always get more attention, but it's bonds that you really need to pay attention to. And wowza, Nacho Man, that was the text message I got from Mish. No comment, just being a swell guy. Thank you very much. A red one. I don't know what the CA is. That Canadian? Is this just a Canadian guy? I don't know. But Nacho Man, thank you so much for supporting the channel. That was very generous, sir. I really appreciate that. I'm sorry I didn't get the $2 reference. I feel even worse about that now. But shoot me an email if there's something behind that $2 thing, because that just went right over my head. Thank you so much, Nacho. I really appreciate the super chat and the generosity. That is awesome. I got the best audience here on this channel. The Melonheads, you guys freaking rock. So does Chris Bot. Chris Bot says, I'm starting a fat coin holding company, gas bag. I think he meant to say a fart coin holding company. Now we're thinking outside the box. Let's go borrow $1 billion to buy fart coin. And I don't know, probably our market cap will go to $1 trillion, because, you know, that's just a great solid business model with really strong fundamentals, you know, big addressable market, upside potential, right? Or, oh my God, it's so silly. I mean, Chris, I'm picking up your sarcasm, but I guarantee you somebody out there is talking about doing it. Probably this Andy Avery guy, who's really named Andy Wilkinson. It's not even his real name. The guy who basically put Fartcoin on the map because he created a stupid chatbot that made butt jokes. And all of a sudden everyone's like, all right, buy Fartcoin because this guy said so. Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen there. There probably will be a Fartcoin holding company. It'll do really well and then it'll go bankrupt. Thank you, Chris Bot, for supporting the channel. You're awesome, brother. Hey, Mish, thank you for gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. That was very swell of you. Welcome to the Melonheads, you 20 new Melonheads. Guys, don't forget to use your one super chat a month. If you use that, you get that free with your membership. I will read and respond to your questions on the air, and be sure and say thank you to Mish. Mish, I appreciate that very much, brother, as well as everything else you do for the channel. Krusty Whitebread says, fusion power is a pipe dream. 1,000 years off minimum. It is a pipe dream. I'll say fusion is a pipe dream. I challenge you on the 1,000. I think we're probably still closer to 50. But the 50, you know, the joke in nuclear fission, which is what I used to work in, the joke is that fusion power has been 50 years away for the last 50 years. We've spent a lot of money and poured a lot of serious human ingenuity and brain power into fusion for decades, and we've made progress, but we've made very little progress. Right now, the best we can do, we can maintain a thermal energy positive reaction for a few trillionths of a second. But a trillionths, that's a number I really struggle to say. And when I say a thermal energy process, thermal energy positive process, it means we get more heat from this blink of an eye, not even a blink of an eye of a fusion reaction, than the energy input that we put into the lasers or whatever system to try to produce that fusion reaction. We get a little bit more heat out, but we don't get electricity out. We still have no way to convert that little bit of heat into electricity. And typically, when we convert heat to electricity, you lose about two-thirds of your energy gains when you do that. That's, you know, the combined Rankine cycle or the Brayton cycle, which is what most of our boil water to make steam to turn a turbine and compress it back to water and then feed it back into the loop. That's typically the efficiency that they operate at. You can get up to like 50% with combined cycles and feed water preheaters and things like that. But guys, we are so far away from a viable fusion power plant. It's ridiculous. And there are some companies out there, one in particular that's backed by Sam Altman, of course, that has already cut a deal to sell power to Microsoft, I think by 2028. They're drunk. No, what they're doing is they're lying. They know this is false. They are making false promises in order to raise venture capital funding in order to keep their science experiment alive, just hoping that breakthrough actually happens and they don't end up going bankrupt and getting sued. You can't go from mildly thermally positive to for a trillionth of a second to a commercially viable power plant in 2 years, not when it's taken you 50 years to get to a few trillionths of a second. Just fusion is so far away. And it's just, it's one of those things, the fraud and the grift, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And unfortunately, what these grifters in fusion are doing is going to damage the reputation of the legitimate scientists who are doing real work and making real advances in fusion. They are going to be dragged into the reputational toilet along with Helion and these dirtbags that are trying to raise money with science fiction. Thank you very much, Krusty White Bread. I would say 50 years, not 1,000 years. The same 50 it's been for 50 years. Pasta Man is back. He says, de minimis exemptions, my favorite economic transformer. Interesting. The de minimis exemption, I think we're probably going to see more of an impact from that than we realize. You know, I can't help but think of all those guys who like Johnny Bravo's courses on selling plastic crap on Amazon. The de minimis exemption going away just killed that business model, right? If you're doing drop shipping from China, you're dead here. You can no longer drop ship from China. Now you got to bring the stuff in like a boatload at a time, store it here in a warehouse and have it drop ship from the United States where your labor costs are going to be a lot higher, which means the cheap plastic crap is going to get more expensive. I don't really care. I don't have like a big appetite for cheap plastic crap anyway. And I hope it works. Let's just put it that way. We need to reshore manufacturing and don't hold your breath. It's going to take a long time for any serious reshoring of manufacturing to happen. The pain will get here first, and we don't have any appetite for pain in this country, unfortunately. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Ed C has been a Melonhead for 7 months. He says the amount of arrogance in private equity and private credit is nauseating. I agree. It is very arrogant. It is very deceptive, but you know what? It pays well. Being a soul-sucking locust, traveling around the country, strip mining value from businesses built by others, hospitals, libraries built by others for your own gain, paying yourself dividends, and then bankrupting the business, sticking somebody else with the debt. Unfortunately, it pays very well. Our society values that more than it does the people who build those things. Maybe we need to change the way we value things here. Just a thought. I 100% agree with you, Ed C. Thank you very much, sir, for being a Melonhead for 7 months. Chris Bott is back again. He said, I meant Fartcoin. I figured you meant Fartcoin. Changing the company name to Congress Invest now. Yes, the gaseous efflux of a treasury holding company, Fartcoin. Thank you very much for the clarification, Chris Bott. I was picking up what you were laying down, though. I appreciate the support of the channel. And thank you, everybody else, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Thank you guys for all the generosity in the Super Chat supporting the channel. You guys are awesome. Same to you, my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you guys so much for supporting the channel. Looking forward for our weekly Q&A on Zoom at 2 p.m. Eastern Time this afternoon. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. You know, for the algo. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.